Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 2:01 p.m. The date is January 20th, 2010. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Bernie Buescher. To my immediate left is Dan Carton, the Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office, Charlie Pike. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. For anyone, we have one measure today, a rehearing on number 35. For anybody who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet on the table by the door. This is a public and recorded meeting, and it's also broadcast over the Internet. And with that background, I think we'll turn to directly to today's agenda item. Mr. Heatherly, this is before us on your motion for rehearing, and if you would come forward to the podium and introduce yourself for the record. And I understand basically you've provided us a nice explanation, and I was not very clear. I apologize last time there's really two titles. There's the title and there's the title in the form of a question, and I should have been clearer about that. But if you would again introduce yourself and who you represent and explain your motion for rehearing, please.
My name is Charles Heatherly, Executive Director of the Rocky Mountain Foundation, and I'm here as a representative of Tom Tancredo and Jim Pfaff, the proponents for the ballot measure. The last meeting, went through this very carefully, constructively, discussing the title and how to make it as concise and accurate as possible. Agreed to some changes that I thought were appropriate for the title, but I did not at that time understand that the exact wording would be carried over into the submission clause as well. And if this is the only wording that the voter would be seeing, unless they went to the actual text of the proposal itself. So when I received this from you 2 days later and realized what had happened, I requested a rehearing for the purpose of changing both the title and the submission. If they have to be identical, virtually identical, then we have to change both to reinsert a clause as I explained in my email request. It accepts the other changes that were made that day, just making only one further change, inserting the phrase after the word regulates in line 4, new wording would be restricts or regulates the right to keep and bear arms or any other right that is guaranteed, et cetera. So it would be inserting a phrase into line 4 in the title and similarly in the submission, if they have to be identical.
And why is that important? I mean, help me understand. It seems like when we discussed this last time, I believe you indicated that the measure applies equally to all of the rights in the Bill of Rights. And I think you explained that the importance of the right to bear arms has to do with an agreement that may be under consideration right now. Is that correct?
The reason for highlighting the one specific right, which is enumerated in Section 13 of the Article 2, is that there is an actual proposal which the present administration in Washington has endorsed, a proposal to write, negotiate, and adopt United Nations Small Arms Treaty by the year 2012. The United States has joined those negotiations. for the first time in history. And there is a considerable amount of momentum for that treaty building, and we expect that that treaty would be completed and then submitted to the United States Senate for ratification shortly thereafter. That is a concrete and imminent threat which we think needs to be highlighted, as an and it also serves as an example and might well then stimulate the citizen to go and look at the rest of the Bill of Rights, what other rights are covered by this. But that's one example of a concrete case that would be affected.
Well, and I do have some reluctance to add this language, but let me kind of lay that out for you. You know, we're responsible for setting titles that are brief and that apprise the voters of the chief features of a measure. And and typically one way we go about that is omitting words or language in a measure that don't add substantially to the meaning of the measure for the voter. Now, I am understanding that this language doesn't add to the substantive meaning because, again, it's just an example of the rights that are in the Bill of Rights. And so I'm not sure that it's a good idea for us to add it if it doesn't add to the substantive meaning of the voters, that the voters would take away. And I'm also concerned that we're facilitating arguments for the measure. And it maybe it's more appropriate for the proponents or the Blue Book to raise examples how this measure might be important to voters, as opposed to the title board facilitating that in the title itself if it doesn't add to the meaning of the measure. Can you help me understand that a little better?
Well, I think it adds to the meaning in the sense that it explains why it's being done now rather than later, why, and I think the average citizen may be skeptical or confused as to why this is necessary, and so giving a specific example of a right that is under a threat is a way of adding accuracy and thoroughness to the measure, so that citizens understand this is something they need to pay attention to, whether they're for it or against it. So I think the example serves a constructive purpose in informing the citizens as to what this is all about.
Other questions for Mr. Heatherly?
May I introduce Jim Pfaff, who did join us. He is one of the proponents of the measure. Not here at the last meeting.
Thank you. Is there anything you wish to say with respect to the motion for rehearing?
Let me introduce him. Come on up, Jim. What we are discussing is the advisability of adding this phrase, the example of the right to keep and bear arms, to the wording that exists now, which does not list a specific example. The language as it exists today includes all of the Bill of Rights. We are proposing to insert this language, which highlights the right to keep and bear arms, as an example. And the reason we chose this example rather than others is that there's an imminent possibility of an international treaty,
right,
which is the subject of the title.
Yeah.
You want to add that?
Just to make a basic statement, I apologize for my tardiness. Finding parking was different than usual, so I timed it wrongly. Since the discussions in these hearings are limited to the appropriateness of titles, and trying to be clear for the voters of Colorado so they understand what's being laid out, the addition of this language would be useful because, for two reasons. First of all, it relates to the specific right at issue. What is it that the voters of Colorado will be voting on? And what is the issue at hand? And make sure to fully clarify for the voters that this is related to a potential for extra governments outside the United States to make treaties with the state of Colorado, or to make treaties with the United States that could affect the state of Colorado and the laws of the state of Colorado, A, and B, that it specifically relates to the right to keep and bear arms. So it's useful to clarify that for those two purposes. It also, because of this, enhances our ability to communicate to the voters of Colorado that that this is designed to make Colorado voters aware, and if it comes into effect, make a clear statement to our elected representatives that the 10th Amendment is an important issue and that we have a basic right as a state to adopt laws and processes and procedures within our law that are that are clearly within our 10th Amendment right to establish rules and procedures where the federal government has not been given specific authority to do. So clarification is a good thing. Laying it out explicitly for the voters of Colorado helps them make the proper decision based upon where they would fall if this is placed on the ballot.
And Mr. Pfaff, as you were walking in, I was questioning Mr. Heatherly about, from the title board's perspective, whether this is a good idea to include in the title, because I mean, this language is to be inserted into the Constitution permanently. Mm-hmm. It would apply. I think it would apply equally to all of the rights in Article 2 of the Colorado Constitution. The particular circumstances giving rise to the proponent's desire for this may be something involving the Section 13 right now. But it just seems to me that that's more appropriate to raise in the debate on the measure as opposed to the title board including something that doesn't add to the meaning of the title. It just gives an example, as Mr. Heatherly said, or explain the motivations of the proponents in offering this amendment at this time. But I'm not sure it's the role of the title board to, in setting brief titles, to give examples or to explain motivations of proponents. I wonder if that's a better thing to take care of in the debate on the measure.
Well, I would answer that with in two ways. First of all, whereas it is a fair matter of handling the law on amendments and initiatives in Colorado, to not overly to be neutral in terms of trying to communicate the desires of the proponents or the prospective opponents of any measure, whereas I agree with the committee's desire to make certain that they follow the law in that regard and that that's fair for everybody. At the same time, I know that the title board, having worked with the title board on other measures in the past, I know that the title board also wants to be completely fair both to the proponents and to the people of Colorado to clarify what's being said. I think to address those two issues, I think that adding these words addresses both those issues, which gives the title board, as I know you're faithfully trying to carry out your what you do, I think gives you the opportunity to take care of both sides of that issue. So,
sure. Go ahead.
I grant your point. I understand your concern, but I don't see that the adding of that additional words prejudices the title one way or the other. The voter is simply given additional information as to what stake here, but he's not going to incline him one way or the other. to vote for or against it, just by knowing that this particular right is highlighted in the title. I mean, the same people will be for it or against it either way, and the wording is not prejudicial.
And to address another issue that you either implied or brought up, and I don't remember specifically how you stated it, so my apologies in advance if I misrepresent, and please correct me if so. In terms of other matters that fall outside of what we're proposing for this amendment, for this ballot measure, I think we have a very specific intent and purpose with this. It is a clarification of one aspect of the Colorado Constitution, as opposed. So I took your question to imply that, well, you know, this is a general issue for a lot of other areas of the amendment or of the Colorado Constitution. There may very well, under some circumstances, be some matter where people may want to address that broadly. It seems to me within the scope of what we're attempting to do with this particular ballot measure to address one portion of the Colorado Constitution and to limit it therein. I think that it may fall without the scope of this committee to determine what the proponents of a measure should consider possibly. I think we've given a lot of consideration to this, and we know specifically that this is a threat that could be coming, and therefore we'd like to address that directly. It allows us still to be faithful to addressing the Constitution, and I'm not certain that we need to impose any more generalities on it. That having been said, these words in particular help clarify specifically both the purpose of the measure as well as clarifying for the voters specifically what they're voting about. And as you know, the purpose for titles is to give the voter a brief description to allow them to know what it is that's taking place. Some of them, I mean, whether we like it or not, they don't dig into the details. This allows them to get straight to the point clearly so that they know exactly what they're voting on.
And if I could say one other thing, and I might be belaboring this just a little bit, but it's just another take at what's bothering me about this a little bit, is that if the measure does apply to all of the Bill of Rights and we single out one as an example, is there, and I'm not suggesting that's present here, but theoretically proponents could single out examples that are most popular with the public, for example, and for all I know, the right to bear arms is more popular than the official English section in Article 2, and I want to be, I'm a little self-conscious about picking the examples that the proponents have, which might be more popular, because again, it may be helping to promote a measure, again, without adding necessarily to the meaning of the measure that we're trying to express in the title. And again, you're motivated, I think, more by current events than you are in trying to sell the measure by mentioning a particularly popular right in the Bill of Rights. But again, that's a consideration for me when we're just simply picking examples that you want us to use in the title.
Let me explain or elaborate, and I think I may have mentioned this last meeting, but elaborate on it. Our original wording when we first started thinking about this was simply to mention Section 13. This applies only to Section 13 and would not be inclusive. Then that was clean and simple. But then we started thinking, why would we give attention to this? The same principle applies to any threat to the other rights from international treaty. So we would want to include the entire Bill of Rights, but still keeping the highlight or the focus on the right to keep and bear arms as an example and as foremost of our concerns at the moment. We were inconsistent. The alternative, adopting the language proposed, the adding of that phrase, alternative to go back to our original concept and list only that zone, not apply it to the rest of the area. That would be, I think, a preferred alternative to not mention it at all, so that voters would know that what really concerns us at the moment in the year 2010 is this United Nations Small Arms Treaty, which threatens Section 13. So could we discuss the pros and cons of that if you're not amenable to simply highlighting that in a more inclusive wording?
I think if the measure were limited just to Section 13, then I think the title would have to reflect that. I think it does make a difference from my perspective on, which choice you make. If you limit it just to the right of to bear arms, then I think the title ought to express that. If you encompass all of the rights of Article 2, I think the title ought to reflect that. But that's your choice, and I'm not critical of your choice, and I'm not even critical of including that example in your language. I'm just looking at it from the title board's perspective, and I may be alone here, so it might be good to find out if I'm spending too much time talking about something that only I'm concerned about.
Well, we would have a strong preference for doing both, for including the entire Bill of Rights, from international treaties, clearly using the right to keep and bear arms as an example of something that is in the Bill of Rights that would be protected. Wouldn't make sense to list all of them, 12 examples, the other 12, how many clubs? There are more than 12, there are about 30. That would be confusing. This seemed to be a reasonable compromise. Have inclusive language, but highlight the one that is under.
Let me go ahead, Mr. Domenico.
Can I just ask one quick question that may be important and maybe not? I just want to clarify again that the point of this is not actually to try to bind elected officials to vote one way or another or take some official action. It's to send them essentially a message from the voters to them that they should, but it's not meant to be binding, right?
In a legislative effect, it's similar to a resolution that would be offered in the list.
Okay. Well, that's my only question. I'm happy to, however the chair wants to proceed.
The other thing is the actual word of the actual wording of the proposed amendment, again, since it includes what we're seeking to amend to the title, would make it appropriate to add there as well. And consistent in terms of, even if someone would try to make the argument that it prejudices the title in favor of the proponents, at the same time, substantively, the actual measure being voted upon is thus prejudiced, and therefore it's consistent with both the intent and the stated purpose of the amendment being offered, and therefore, in my estimation, and I respectfully submit this to your consideration, that it be added to the title as well. Referencing back to the fact that we understand the purpose of titles, which is to give the voter the opportunity to get a brief description of what's taking place, should they potentially not, or giving them the ability to either dig further for clarification and or, make their determination based upon the title at hand, which we know some voters do. Therefore, it's important for that clarification.
Any other questions for proponents? And let me just turn to board discussion and find out where the board is. Mr. Pfaff, while I'm doing that, would you mind signing in?
I'd be glad to. Okay.
Thank you. Discussion by the board? Mr. Carton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Heatherly and Mr. Pfaff. I just would like to, as briefly as I can, walk through my thought process on this with the kind of the outcome where I'm at right now. Is I tend to agree with Mr. Hobbs, and more or less would be supportive of denying the motion and adding the language about the right to keep and bear arms to the title. And let me just kind of explain why. And I appreciate, Mr. Heatherly, your reasoning that adding that language adds to the accuracy of the title. Mr. Pfaff, you stated that adding that language relates to kind of the specific right that's at issue here. But I go back to the title board's obligation, which, Mr. Pfaff, I think you stated accurately, and that's the title for the proposed law or constitutional amendment basically shall correctly and fairly express the true intent and meaning thereof. And that's 140.106, subsection 3B, and the constitutional provision mirrors that. And so I think that's where the title board's obligation is, and we have case law that speaks to that, talks about initiated measures title will be rejected only if it is misleading, inaccurate, or fails to reflect the central features of the proposed initiative. It's a matter of ballot title 1997-98, number 74, 962P2D, 927. In setting titles, the board must correctly and fairly express the true intent and meaning of the proposed initiative and must consider the public confusion that might be caused by misleading titles. It's NRA ballot title 1999-2000, numbers 245B, 245C, 245D, and 245E, 1P3rd, 720. And ordinarily, I give great deference to the proponents and what direction they want to go with the proposed language of a title, and I'm reluctant to speculate on whether or not a title may be misleading or may shift the focus on one particular aspect of the measure rather than the single subject of the measure as a whole. But in this one, I'm a little bit concerned that if we list, if you highlight or if you call out the right to keep and bear arms, and then or any other right that is guaranteed, to me there's the potential that the rest of the enumerated rights under Article 2 will become almost an afterthought. I think that kind of builds a little bit on Mr. Hobbs's reasoning behind, you know, as far as adding a particular or choosing a particular right among the Bill of Rights. And one case in particular says a title which merely tracks language used in a proposal may still be misleading where the general understanding of the effect of a yes or no vote will nevertheless be unclear. And the parties have agreed at the title setting hearing to the addition of language stating the undisputed intent and purpose of the measure in terms more likely to be understood by the voters. And I think that the title that we set at our meeting on January the 6th is an accurate title. And I think that it does. And I think part of the issue here, and I'm jumping around a little bit, but this is a unique measure, because it is more of a resolution type of measure. It's a declaration and request that elected officials not act to impair rights under the Colorado Bill of Rights. And so kind of focusing on that, I think that it's important to me that the title, that the single subject of the title is just that. And I know, because of the reasons that you've stated, that you would like to highlight that bill, the right to bear arms. But again, for the reasons I've stated, I'm a little bit concerned that may make the single subject of the measure more or less of an afterthought, which is the entire Bill of Rights. One example, you know, hypothetically, and this probably is a little bit weak, but it's almost as if there was a measure that requested that elected officials not take any step to impair contribution limits under Article 28 of the campaign, under Article 28 of the Constitution or any other campaign finance provisions. to me, that would, you would still, the single subject would still be Article 28. Not the single subject, but the article that's the focus would be Article 20. Here, I think it's Article 2, and I'm and I think that the title as written is accurate. And so that's kind of where I'm at, Mr. Chair, and I'm certainly happy to hear what you have to say. And I know Mr. Domenico's got his hand
up. Mr. Domenico.
Well, I disagree with both of you. All of the arguments you've made, I think, would make sense if this were somehow a binding meant to actually do something other than send a message. But given that the purpose of this is to send a message, and specifically to send a message, the reason it's coming up now is to send a message specifically about a pending international agreement that in the proponent's view would impair a specific right. I agree that the ballot title, I think, that we set before is accurate and would be upheld by a court. But that, to me, doesn't answer the question. There are, I think, generally almost infinite ways we can write a title that would be upheld. I think we should avoid including immaterial language. I think, frankly, if I remember correctly, it was my suggestion to remove this language last time. And so, to me, I think one way or the other, but it would be upheld. I don't think necessarily that this language, though, is immaterial, which is or misleading. I don't think it's immaterial because for the point of this is to send a message. And yes, it's includes some other language that you elected officials should protect all of our rights. But it's meant to send a message about a specific pending agreement. And if the point of it is to send a message, including the message, excluding that the specific point of that message from the title somewhat undermines the intent of the measure. So I don't think it's immaterial. For the same or related reasons, I guess, I don't think it's misleading. It's not us adding this language. I think, frankly, the case that Mr. Carton quoted from or quoted the summary of, if anything, supports adding this. This language is in there. I suspect that the import of that case would actually be that even if the language were not in the measure, that the court would consider upholding our adding that language to the title if everyone agreed that that was really the purpose, was to highlight one measure. Now, to me, I don't think it can be misleading, again, because this is not about trying to bind our elected officials to protect every right in the state constitution against international agreements. It's really meant to send a message about a pending specific agreement. And as the proponents have said, it also recognizes that that principle should apply to protecting other rights that we have under the state constitution. But the main goal here is, in fact, to send a message about this particular agreement that they're concerned about, and that if that's the goal, and I think that the language of the measure itself, in fact, if I were an elected official, would understand that that's the goal, that they want me to pay attention to this pending agreement. And if it passed, that's what the voters were trying to tell me. But if that's what elected officials are meant to understand, if this passes, then voters, when they look at the title, I understand are charged to be to tell the voters that that's what they're trying to do. So all of your arguments would be much stronger, in my view, if this were meant to be binding. Since it's meant to be symbolic, largely, or to send a message. Leaving language out simply because it doesn't have any legal effect doesn't, in my view, make sense. It's true that leaving this out wouldn't change the legal implications, but there are really, according to the proponents, no binding legal implications. So I think your arguments, we would have had nothing to say, for example, in the title on the pieces possible measure, because really the whole measure was immaterial. Here there's something that they just wanted to make a statement. Here they want to make a specific statement. In my view, that changes the analysis quite a bit, and that including this language is not immaterial and not misleading, and is, if not at least as good as the way it is, perhaps a bit clearer to voters what they really are voting on, is sending a message about this treaty. I understand the concerns, especially about if proponents of other measures could come in and start listing, oh, well, these are the most popular provisions, and we're going to kind of sneak in the one we're concerned about under the radar. That's clearly not the case here, and would be effectively, I think, impossible to do in this kind of symbolic measure, because the whole point is to highlight the thing you're concerned about. So that changes it for me. And I would vote to grant the motion.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to parliamentary procedure, would you allow a comment or addressing of?
I will in just a moment. Let me hear from Mr. Carton.
I appreciate it.
Unless you want to yield.
That's fine.
Oh, go ahead then. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't have the code in front of me, so I can't pull out the specific reference. But titles also, with respect to the second, your second point, the second article of the initiative law that you pointed to, it is true that the title should not is not required to just go straight with all the language that's laid out in the measure being considered. At the same time, the title also should not be prejudiced against substantively what is in the measure that will be passed. At the end of the day, this measure, if passed, will be presented to the legislators as the specific language states, and a material aspect of that language, which will go into the Constitution, says it does relate not just to our general Bill of Rights under Article 2, but to Section 13 in particular. So therefore, it may prejudice potentially with respect to the board members, because I think you're addressing this in a reasonable fashion, and I appreciate your giving thought to it. But it may prejudice against something that is a material aspect of the measure if passed, and therefore may bring up a point of appropriateness in adding the language for the purpose of that clarification. In any event, is neutral in the issue, because it is something that is materially here and is of material concern to the voters of Colorado, therefore.
Mr. Carton, did you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And very briefly, thank you for that. I guess my first comment, if I understand you correctly, Mr. Domenico, and is that perhaps where the title board has a measure before it that is more declaratory or ceremonial rather than substantive, then perhaps we have more leeway, or we're subject to a lesser standard as far as expressing the single subject. And I guess I'm reluctant, and I think that's a reasonable argument. I'm just not sure I agree with that.
Well, that's not my argument at all. I think the standard is the same. I think, though, that you have to ask yourself, the question we're supposed to be asking ourselves is, are we conveying to voters what they would be doing if they vote yes or no on this measure? The answer to that question is very different if what the voters are supposed to be voting on is whether to send a message or whether they're imposing some kind of new legal regime on themselves, or in this case, on their legal representatives. I think the standard is the same. It's just that what you're trying to do is different. I mean, ask yourself this. Which title gives voters a better idea of what they would be doing, of what they would be trying to do if this passed? The one that includes the language, I mean, or the one that doesn't? To me, I think that the proposal is conveys something material that what we adopted last time leaves out, and that is that a representative who reads the actual measure, were it to pass, would say, hey, the voters sent me a message about this particular treaty, and they could take that for whatever it's worth. Whereas an elected official vote who simply read the title would say, well, I mean, okay, so I'm supposed to protect all the provisions of the Bill of Rights. That's good. To me, it leaves out something material. In other words, a voter who simply read the title as it's written might vote yes, but if they read the measure itself and say they're an opponent of expansive right to bear arms and would support certain restrictions on the right to bear arms, might vote no if they read the measure, but might vote yes if they read the title, because I think it's a bit misleading. So I don't think that the standard is different. I think that what's material is different, because the very purpose of this is to send a message specifically about the right to bear arms, and the title, as written, you have to go looking. You have to be thinking about that, or at least get into it.
That would play itself out,
I think, if this were meant to be binding. But since it's meant simply to send a message, I'm not sure that leaving that language out actually conveys to the voter what message they would be sending.
And I really don't see what difference it makes whether it's binding or non-binding. I mean, I think, to me, it could be mandatory, or in this case it's a request, but it's a request to do something. And that's what I think we're trying to express in the title, a request. And the proponents indicated that they pondered over this. Should it be a request to protect just the right to bear arms, or should it be a request to protect all of the rights in the Bill of Rights? And they chose to protect all of the rights that are in the Bill of Rights. And that's a choice, and that's the effect of the measure. It's a request to elected officials to protect all of them. And I think it's all of them equally. The fact that the point of the measure may be to send a message about something that may be happening right now really goes, I still feel like that goes to the motivations or the arguments behind the measure. If the measure were directed just at Section 13, then that would be reflected in the title. But as long as the effect of the measure is to request elected officials to protect all of the Bill of Rights, I think that's what the title ought to clearly express, and not single out any of them as if they have any special treatment in the measure. Because there are others that, as Mr. Domenico was saying, this maybe people would vote for or against this based on what they think about the right to bear arms. They also may vote for or against this based on what they think about the official English section. There, why we single out one when it has no more effect in the measure is just hard for me to follow.
Well, that's where I did. It does have more effect in the measure. It's called out in the measure, and the reason it is, and I think any official reading this would understand that, is because they want to call out a specific thing that's going on and send a message about that thing. It does. That's why I would agree with you if this were binding, that if it were binding, and leaving aside whether it could be binding, say this actually said you have to vote against any measure, anything that restricts any right, everything else were the same. There I would agree with you that then the elected official reading this would have to behave precisely the same. But since it's symbolic, it is a material aspect, I think, of the measure, what the voters are supposed to be sending a message about. Reading this as a lawyer, yes, it's the same, but reading it as a voter or reading it as an elected official, the point I'm supposed to be sending or getting is different. It does have, since it's symbolic, it does, in my view, and I think in the proponent's view, the measure is intended, the very reason to have it in there, as they've said repeatedly, is to send a specific message about something going on right now. And so I disagree with the premise that it doesn't have any special meaning in the measure itself. I think the measure itself does give it special meaning precisely because it's supposed to send a message about that specific treaty.
And I actually agree with most of what you're saying, but I think the measure itself speaks for itself. I think that language is in the measure. And I think elected officials need to read the measure. They don't read the titles. That's simply for the petition and for the ballot. I don't think it has any specific significance for purposes of the title. I think elected officials, like all measures, have to read the text of the measure itself. And whatever significance is given to the various words, and we've omitted other words that have significance, they need to read all of those words that are in the text. They all have significance. And I'm not trying to say anything different. So, Mr. Heatherly?
If I recall correctly, gentleman Cardin's citation, the first citation, used the words true intent. The title must reflect the true intent. It seems to me that accurate point that there's a material asset to including that language to more accurately and thoroughly reflect the true intent of the proponents and what the voters are actually doing. So I see that as an argument for the initial argument because it's more accurate and gives the voter a more precise understanding of what is being done.
Mr. Cardin.
Thanks, Mr. Heatherly. And I don't know if this directly addresses that, but you yourself has said that you considered whether you should single out Section 13 of Article 2 or include the universe of rights under the Bill of Rights, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but came to the determination basically of why should we single that out for purposes of the text.
Exclusive.
Right. So going back to the intent is to reach out.
But there's a difference between being exclusive intent and the primary intent.
Well, perhaps. Thank you.
Mr. Pfaff?
I might add as well, I mean, keep in mind within the actual language of the measure if passed that we presented, the discussion about the general rights in Article 2 is a subordinate clause. That is a significant factor in terms of determining intent. We have laid it out very specifically to cover Section 13. And also, you know, keep in mind it's within our responsibility as well in this regard to consider all the rights in Article 2 and to make a statement about it in our measure so that it not be unduly circumspect in regards to one section. So it is a subordinate clause. We're clearly trying to state the purpose here. Mr. Domenico's made a cogent argument about what actual potential harm exists that this measure is seeking to address. Yes, sir.
And I, you know, maybe this is helpful. If the measure itself made other rights besides the right to bear arms have secondary importance, then I think then I would be more interested in trying to capture that in the title. You know, you're talking about subordinate clause.
I'm saying a subordinate clause.
But the way I read the measure, it applies, again, equally to all of the rights. And the only reason I think that we I have to pick my words carefully because I think, you know, Mr. Domenico is concerned about the fact that the point of the measure is to send a message about the Bill of Rights right now. Assuming that's true, and I believe that's true, that's from testimony that we have. That's not expressed in the measure. The measure is written to equally protect all of the Bill of Rights, and I respect that. But I'm reluctant to capture in the title that intent, that immediate purpose of the proponents for purposes of a measure that's going to stay in the Constitution. Mr. Domenico?
Well, that's just not true. I mean, the measure itself, in fact, it's not from testimony. If the proponents hadn't shown up, we would know that there's specific land. This isn't us pulling this out or them coming in and saying, add this because this treaty came up. It specifically says that. The measure itself treats it differently. Its legal effect, were this binding, might not be different, and that's the point I've been trying to emphasize. You're right, and they've conceded, and everyone understands that if it came down to it, the whatever obligation someone has is the same regarding the right to bear arms as any other right. But the point of this is to send a message. The title is supposed to convey to voters what they would be doing if they voted yes. And to me, I think it's a material aspect of what they would be doing, that they would be voting on something that specifically discusses this one right, even if the legal implications are the same as to every right. I mean, I find it far-fetched to believe that the average voter would think that nothing is being left out reading the title, comparing it to the measure. I think the average voter would want to know that they're voting on something that specifically calls out one right, even if it also includes these other rights. And I think you may be those voters. I mean, you yourself, Mr. Chairman, said that, yes, an elected official would want to know that. But the voter, I think, should know just as well. And if that's our obligation to the voter, to tell them the things that they should need to know, the material aspects, I do think that given that this is meant to send a message, and I don't think anybody can disagree that it's a material part of the message they're sending, that it calls out this specific right, everyone reading the measure itself would understand that there's something specific about this one right that's being called out. Leaving that out of the title would be misleading to at least some subset of voters that might push it one way or the other. And I guess we're not really getting anywhere. So I'll just restate my position that I think you're leaving out. I'm curious if my fellow board members actually think that it's immaterial to the average voter. If it would be immaterial to the typical voter to have this language in or out, given specifically what the measure does, which is send a message that is specifically meant to highlight this pending treaty.
Well, I guess I would say in response to that, that based purely on reading the text of the measure and not on the testimony, I understand the measure as requesting elected officials to protect equally all of the rights that are listed in Article 2. I understand why the text of the measure, I think I understand why in the text of the measure, and this is based on testimony, why one is singled out, but I don't just reading the text itself, I think the request is to protect all of them equally. And so I don't know why the title would single one out as having primacy over another when the text doesn't support that. And I think that may be sort of the heart of our disagreement, whereas I think, Mr. Domenico, the fact that the proponents chose to call that one out makes it primary in your mind, I believe, or gives it
well,
some...
Well, it's in the measure. That's what. That's why. I would be, if I voted yes on this, I would be telling my representatives something about all the rights, yes, but I really want them to think about this one right. And that's in the measure. That's not from them. Now, I know why from the proponents they're concerned about that one right. But the measure itself tells me that I want to send a message about this, all the rights, but specifically about one right. And the title doesn't do that right now.
Okay. Mr. Carton.
Right, and I appreciate that, but I guess I go back to the first meeting where I think it was Mr. Hobbs that said that the right to keep and bear arms and that particular right that's called out, that probably will be highlighted in the debate. So I don't think it's immaterial to the measure or to the content of the measure, but going back to the title that we set, I still feel as though that's an accurate title that expresses the single subject of the measure given the text of the measure, notwithstanding the fact that, as Mr. Path said, he's made the argument that other rights contained in the Bill of Rights is a secondary clause to the right to keep and bear arms. I hope you appreciate that I think the title that we set, and I appreciate Mr. Domenico's arguments, but to me that's an accurate title. We had the discussion. The fact that the measure may be symbolic, I'm not getting my arms around that particular piece of it. So I appreciate your comments and your arguments. I hope you can appreciate where I'm coming from as a board member and trying to be consistent in how I set titles.
Mr. Domenico.
I'd just like to suggest that that's the wrong standard to be applying. My view is, whether the current title is accurate or not is not this or would be upheld by a court is not the standard to apply. It should be whether we can write a title that's better and still complies with the standards. And I think that we can. I think I still agree that the current title is legal and probably would be upheld. I just think that giving the voters a bit more information about the message they'd be sending, which is all this is, I mean, I'm starting to convince myself that the current title actually is misleading in that it doesn't tell the average voter what they would be doing. It misleads them. The average voter might read the title and say, yeah, that's a nice general statement of the 10th Amendment. But someone who didn't, someone who is less concerned about the right to bear arms might be misled by the current title into voting yes and sending a message that they didn't mean to send. I mean, I think, in my view, the measure with the language about this, the right to bear arms, is materially different than if it didn't include that language, in my view. as a symbolic measure. As a, if it were meant to be binding, then I don't think there'd be any difference. But since it's symbolic, including the language changes the message that's being sent by it. And the title treats the two as the same, and I think they're different. So in my view, the title, whether you think it was okay before, is not the right standard. I think it would be better with this language, if not, even if you think it's okay previously, which is a borderline question, I think, even though it's my fault. We were about to vote on it with, without taking this language out before. So that's where I am. I think our standard should be whether we can improve upon the title, given that we have a chance to, and I think we can, and it's potentially, I think we might have to. So I don't know if it probably doesn't make sense to have any more discussion. I can offer a futile motion to approve the motion for rehearing. Would that be the proper motion if they're
and grant the motion for rehearing?
Yeah, I move that we grant the motion for rehearing.
And that fails for lack of a second. Is there another motion? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move that we deny the motion for rehearing for 2009-2010 number 35.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? I do want to mention, I actually think this has been very helpful, and boy, we really struggle on titles that we think are even the simplest ones. I think I really understand a lot better where Mr. Domenico is coming from, that he thinks, why he thinks the current title is misleading, and I can kind of see that. In the course of the discussion, I've kind of come to believe that if we put it in, that would be misleading. And I can actually see the truth of I think, both points of view. But we've moved in opposite directions in the course of the discussion, I think, so I guess there's some value to that, even though I'd rather we all reached unanimity. But it does seem to me that it would be misleading to put it in now, more misleading than not, but I respect the different points of view on that. So if with that, all the motion is to deny the motion for rehearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. That concludes action on number 35. The time is 3:05 p.m., and we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.